Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
There are so many Christian women with fascinating stories, whether missionaries, musicians, reformers, authors, or wives and mothers. Their examples are inspirational to us, aren't they, Cheryl?
They are. So all of us. So this woman is inspirational that I have today, but she's also quite a character. And her life was full of setbacks, but she was absolutely determined. And I just love her determination. And I was telling you earlier in studio, I had heard of her before. And we're talking about Mary Ann Aldersey. And what I had heard about her, I was really put off by. You know,
interesting.
You'll find that at the end of her life, she has an altercation with one of my heroes of the faith. And I didn't like her for that altercation. And then when I read her whole story, you're thinking, you know what? This woman did so much for Jesus, was so determined to serve the Lord. I don't want to be like that. You know, she was a great woman who had a great lapse, you know. So let's talk about Mary Ann Aldersey. She was born in 1797. In a wealthy house in Hackney, London. So I wanted to put a timeline on this. So I was thinking Jane Austen would have been about 25 years old.
Oh, that's good.
When Mary Ann was born. Her parents were Christians. They were Congregationalists. And their names were Joseph and Elizabeth Aldersey. Mary Ann was their fourth child. So when she was young, a nurse used to fill her with stories about China. And she started developing a heart for the Chinese women and the plight of the Chinese women. Later, when she was older, in her 20s, Robert Morrison, who was the first missionary to China and had translated the whole New Testament into the Chinese language, visited her little congregational church. And her congregational church was also part of the London Missionary Society. So she was getting these introductions to these missionaries, and she was just taken with Robert. He was a widow. He was very handsome, but he was also engaged to a second woman. But he offered classes in Chinese. Well, the interesting thing about that, for the beginning, they were only for men. And he said, no, it's the women that are making a difference. I want to open it up to women.
Yes.
So Mary Ann began to take these classes, and she took them with two other women who become very significant. And one is Maria Tarn. And she was the daughter of the London Mission Society director. But later, Maria Tarn will marry a Reverend Dyer, and they will go on the mission field together. But what's interesting about her is she will become, even though she's going to die, the mother of Hudson Taylor, the mother-in-law of Hudson Taylor.
Oh, interesting.
So everything is going to connect. She married Samuel Dyer, but I've got more on Maria for another podcast because she's going to be a whole podcast too. But in the meantime, not only did she take these Chinese lessons, but she also worked in the slums of London. And working in the slums of London, which weren't too far from her house, she was often pelted by rocks and brickbats. I don't know what brickbats are, but it sounds really, really bad.
Yes.
And yet she continued to minister because she was wanting to help the young girls there in their plight. She was very petite, and some even said frail, but she had a will of iron and she would not be dissuaded. Her father told her, you may not go to China. I need you, because her mother died when she was 25. And her father said, I need you to run the household. I would miss you too desperately. You're my last child and you're too frail. And I don't want to see you die there. So what she did instead is she felt like the Lord was calling her to honor her father. She sponsored two women to go to Java, because at this time China had closed because of the opium wars between England and China. So China was closed, especially to the Brits, and a war was going on. But she found out that in Java, there was a huge Chinese settlement. And she thought, that's where I can minister. But as I said before, because it became closed, her father forbid her, she sponsored two women to go to Java through London City Mission. London Mission Society. One was a lady named Maria Newell, who had taken Chinese lessons with her. Another woman, she sponsored, but that woman en route to Java had a nervous breakdown and was sent back. So then she took the support that she had and she said, can it go to Maria Tarn Dyer and her husband Samuel, since they're going to Hong Kong? So they did. Now, there was a there was that settlement with these families living in Java that Maria Newell was able to minister to. But in the meantime, not being able to go to China, not being able to go on the mission field, Marianne joined a society called, I don't even know if you could pronounce it, but it's SPFEE. So it's Society for the Promotion of Foreign Education in the East. Is that a mouthful?
Yes.
Such a mouthful. So she starts supporting that. She becomes this active member with these other women. Like, how can we get the Chinese women educated? How can we get them to read and write and know skills? Because the more she heard of the plight of the Chinese women, the more grieved she was. Women were, for the most part, housebound. They were kept as slaves in their own house. Their feet were bound. It was called the Golden Lotus. So these little girls would be born. And when they were about three or four, the four of their toes would be broken. Not the big toe, but the other toes would be broken.
Have you ever broken a toe? It's so painful.
So painful. And they're three and four.
Baby.
And they're turned under their feet, and then they're bound in order to keep their feet small and petite. Mm. And it's called the Golden Lotus. So the women then prided themselves on who had the smallest feet. And it made walking, it made everything that they would do, any household chores, very, very difficult. Also, the men often beat their wives. The little girls were sold to be husbands of older men, sold as young as 8 and 9 years old to be these wives of these older men. Mm. And so Mary, hearing that plight, was thinking, this is what we'll do. Well, she got really, really excited because in 1832, her father said, you know what? I've been wrong. I've been convicted by the Lord. I think you should go to China. She was so excited. But in that same year, her sister-in-law, her beloved sister-in-law, died. Mm-hmm. And her brother was left as a widow with either. Now, the sources change on this one. Some say he had 5 children. Some say he had 8 children. And he begged Marianne to come live with him and take care of those children. And she felt that was her responsibility. So she went to live with her brother to take care of these young children. And this is part of the way of the Lord, because she became their tutor. She became their teacher. And she was teaching all these children. Well, one day a woman commented, oh, Marianne, you look so happy. You look like a queen amongst all of these children. And this is what she replied. I would rather be in prison with the Chinese children around me.
Oh, my.
Yes. She's,
her heart was really committed.
Really committed to China. Yeah. And though her nieces and nephews all loved her and all thought about that time with joy, it was said that Maria was frustrated and sometimes even depressed. But she continued to take Chinese language lessons from a Chinese gentleman that the kids all thought was so mysterious and fun, because he would come in his silk costume with his long pigtail and give their aunt Chinese lessons. Well, her brother remarried in 1837, and this freed up Marianne for the first time to go on the mission field. But by this time, she's 40 years old. And people are saying, nope, the same thing that happened to that missionary you were sponsoring is going to happen to you. You're going to go mental. And, you know, you're a risk. So she did two things. She decided, one, that she would be self-supportive, that she didn't need the money and the support of the London Mission Society.
Wow.
Secondly, she submitted herself to a medical and mental exam to show that she was absolutely healthy mentally. However, submitting to this exam, the doctor said, mentally, you're sharp, you're ready for this, but physically, you are so frail, I'm afraid you're going to die en route or, you know, in service to the Lord. Nevertheless, she was determined to go frail or not frail. She had met Dr. Medhurst and his wife who were going to Java, and she decided to go with them down to, you know, this island Java of Indonesia. And Dr. Medhurst had taken over Robert Morrison's ministry when he died. And so he was very influential, very important. And he and his wife had already started schools for boys and set up printing presses that were printing the Chinese, the Bible in Chinese, as well as books on Christianity. And if you remember, Robert Morrison was the first to translate the Bible into Chinese. So they were taking up that work and they were printing it and getting it out to the Chinese settlements. And the Chinese settlements were sending it back into China and Hong Kong.
That's just remarkable because of that. The mid-1800s, I compare it to the Hawaiian history where it's the same thing. They had a printing press that they brought over on the ship so they could do the work right there.
Yes. So they brought it to, you know, this island in Indonesia. So he and his wife were with Marianne when the ship called the Hashemi left the port of Gravesend, Kent. Now, that doesn't sound very promising, does it? On August 10th, 1837, and arrived to Java on December 2nd, 1837. Now, Dr. Medhurst really, and his wife Eliza, they really encouraged Marianne, you know, stay here in Java for a while. Get to know the Chinese, and this will give you inroads when you move forward. Mm. So they had connections with a Dutch clockmaker and said, you can stay with him for a few months and just kind of get your bearings. So upon arrival, Elizabeth exclaimed, I had arrived on the day of my dear parents' wedding day. On the day of my arrival among the Chinese, it was also my wedding day. I, having betrothed myself to a people so interesting to me. Again.
Committed.
She's committed.
Fully committed. And you said Elizabeth.
So Elizabeth was Dr. Medhurst's wife.
Got it. Okay.
And so this is actually Mary Ann speaking. So I think I might have mixed that up.
I got it now. Okay, continue.
So Dr. Medhurst suggested she worked in a special place called, and this is where I don't know how to pronounce it, but it looks like Surabaya. Surabaya. To me, it looks like sour. Baya. But that's where she started out in a Dutch settlement. Now, she roomed, as I said, she took a room with a Dutch clockmaker and his Javanese wife. They spoke no English and she spoke no Dutch. They spoke a little bit of the Malay dictionary language. So she kept a Malay dictionary with her at all times so she could just communicate to her landlord. Well, her landlord was getting kind of upset with her because she wasn't going to church. And she spent every Sunday going into the Chinese settlement. And he didn't like that either because the Dutch considered at that time, the Dutch settlers, the Chinese so far below them. And they didn't want them educated and they because they were their servants. And so he was really getting upset. So he asked her to leave. So Mary decided to purchase a house and with that house to set up a church with one of the Chinese men that she had led to the Lord. His name was Sion. And so she sets up this church. She has him speak at this church and she's really using Sion as her main translator so she can minister to the Chinese. Another thing that she did is she knew basic nursing. And she had a bag that she would take and she would minister to the people that she saw and she would take Sion with her and he would translate. And she was paying Sion to do this. She starts the school for the girls and she gets some pupils. And among those pupils are two young girls, Atti and Kit. And Auntie and Kit receive Jesus and really, really love Jesus. At the same time, there's a Scottish merchant who can't take care of his daughter, and her name is also Mary, Mary Lysk. And Mary begins to work with Mary Ann. And Mary Lysk has this grasp of the Chinese language. And Auntie and Kit also speak Chinese, where Mary Ann, though she studied it, though she even had Robert Morrison's dictionaries, is finding it so difficult to grasp this language. And it said that she never fully grasped the language. She had enough to get by.
I can imagine.
And
so
because
difficult.
It's a tonal language as well as words.
Well, and you and I know people who just pick up languages, and others
yep.
who I've lived in this country for a long time, I still don't know how to converse fully.
Yep.
That's not unusual. But still, to have the heart to be there. I'm fully committed. What else can I do if I can't speak?
Mm, exactly.
Plenty.
So she was, you know, going around and treating even the Javanese people and treating the Chinese people. When one day, and this is important, one of the regents in Java asked for her help. And she, with her simple medicine, was able to cure him. And so he was indebted to her. But that was not, you know, knowing how indebted he was to her for a while. So she began to be a little suspicious of Sion as she grasped the Chinese language and as she talked to Mary Lysk. They begin to see these inconsistencies in Sion. For instance, he still kept idols in his house. Secondly, none of his kids had converted to Christianity. And she began to realize that he was not being honest with the money that she was giving him. And he was doing the church all in pretense. She even found out that he decided that the young little Auntie, who was only like 9 or 10, should marry his drug addict son.
No.
And he set up like a betrothal arrangement with Addie's mother. Addie was so upset. And she went to Mary Ann and she said, you know, I don't know what to do. I cannot marry Sion's evil son. But if I don't, my mother has threatened to kill me. And Mary Ann said, will she really kill you? And she said, yes, she'll poison me.
Oh.
So Auntie had to watch all the food that she ate. At the same time, lots of opposition from the Dutch traders arose, and they tried to remove Mary Ann from the island. But here's where, you know, you reap what you sow. The regent, the Javanese regent, who was in charge of the island with others, he convinced them that Mary Ann was an asset to the island, as well as her school, her pupils, and her healing arts. So she was able to
Wonderful.
Stay.
Yes.
Well, at the same time, she was feeling very called to China. And she thought, well, if I go to Hong Kong, I'm that much closer to China. And I can take Mary Lysk with me because she's really, really become like my daughter. And Mary Lysk about this time is 14 or 15 years old. And she wanted to also take Kit and Auntie, knowing that if they stayed, their fate would be terrible.
Yeah.
So she decided she's going to make her way to Hong Kong because in Hong Kong is her friend Maria Tarn Dyer, who has set up a school for Chinese girls, as well as a school for Chinese boys. And she's thinking, if I can just get to Hong Kong, that will be the next step before China. So she made plans with a certain English family that lived in Java. And the wife of this English family had the idea to dress up these girls, Auntie and Kit, so that they could escape their homes. So she dressed up Auntie as a wealthy Chinese woman and Kit as her servant. They were almost caught this one night as they were escaping. But they were able to escape to the other side of the island to Dr. Medhurst's house. Remember Dr. Medhurst?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so his wife, Eliza, dressed the girls differently every day because Sean had hired spies all over the island to catch these girls. But the girls were never, ever caught. And they were able to be snuck on a boat by the Medhurst to Singapore. But before they left, they were both baptized, Addie and Kit, by Dr. Medhurst. Now, when Addie's mother found out that her daughter was gone and could not be found, she raged at Mary Ann, who was in the process of selling her house, closing the school, and packing for China. Mary Ann and Mary Lisk traveled to Macau first, a Portuguese town near Hong Kong. And Mary there heard of a doctor, Mary Ann, Dr. Lockhart, and his family who were moving to Hong Kong. And she thought, you know, if he's going to commit and take his whole family to Hong Kong, I know it's safe to go. So she decided that she would catch the first boat that she could with Mary Lisk to Hong Kong. But this took some time. In fact, Kit and Addie arrived before she did. But again, they're Chinese. And they were able to room with the Dyers for a time and, you know, help with the school until Mary Ann could join them. The four, Mary Ann and Mary Lisk and Kit and Addie, were all reunited on Christmas Day in
Hong Kong.
Yes, in 1841. I just want to get my dates right.
Yes.
So they were all able to help with all of that.
And how remarkable that she had, that Mary Ann had the ability to make these decisions and help others and go because she's self-funded.
Yes.
Oh, that's really.
Christmas 1842. I want to get this right.
Yeah.
Yes. Because they're going to stay for a time, just, you know, as long as they can in Hong Kong, or they're waiting actually for a port to open up in China. So the English won the war, but they won it in a shameful way by introducing opium to the people so that the people would be high and not able to fight.
Right.
In fact,
functional.
In the book I read, it said this is something that, you know, the English are still ashamed about.
Yeah.
It really was. It was bad. But, you know, the merchants wanted to get into, the English merchants wanted to get to the goods, the Chinese goods.
Tea. We need all the tea in China.
Yeah, all the tea in China. That's right. So after a treaty between England and China was agreed upon, five ports on the mainland opened up. And one of those port cities was called Ningpo, which is where Mary Ann decided that the four of them should go and set up the first school for girls in China. Now, Ningpo was a very ancient city on the banks of the Yangtze River, and it had a wall around it that was 5 miles of granite. Now, at first, Mary Ann could not move into the city. She had to wait for a while living on the outside of the city, but soon a house opened up. And so inside the center of the city, Mary Ann purchased that house and began to set up her school. So that's only part one.
And she must have been so excited finally after all these years. The home of her heart. She has arrived.
She's finally
set up.
Finally there.
Oh.
And she can finally set up this school for girls. So she's part of that education for girls. But all will not be smooth. You know, sometimes the Lord will coax us into the mission field, and then there will be opposition and there will be hardship. And you're going to find that Mary Ann has hardship. She has opposition. All that comes in episode two, the hardship, the opposition. In fact, she will even be labeled the Witch of Ningpo.
Oh, dear.
And there's a reason that she's going to be called the Witch of Ningpo, all which we'll get into episode two. But again, there's going to be so much opposition. There's going to be slander. There's going to be even riots coming against her, but she is going to persevere. So that's why you want to come back.
Yes,
for
I
episode
do.
Two.
Can't wait. Thanks, Cheryl.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at wwk@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.